From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Don't you think it is important to give a specific list of hospitals that you're accusing Russia of hitting? Those are grave accusations.
That was RT's journalist Gayan Chichikayan at the U.S. State Department daily press briefing earlier this week, asking John Kirby, the department's spokesperson, for the particulars of accusations that the State Department has made that Russia has been bombing civilian hospitals in Syria.
I'm not making those accusations. I'm telling you we've seen reports from credible aid organizations that five hospitals and a clinic, you can go look at the information that many of the Syrian relief agencies are putting out there publicly. We're getting our information from them, too. These reports,
but you're citing those reports without giving any specifics.
Because we believe these agencies are credible, and because we have other sources of information that back up what we're seeing from some of these reports. And you know what? Why don't you ask? Here's a good question. Why don't you ask your defense ministry what they're doing
and
see if you can get?
List of hospitals. My colleagues who are listening hopefully would be able to go and ask Russian officials about a specific list of hospitals.
But despite Chichikayan's repeated requests for the specifics of the accusations, Kirby refused and instead challenged her objectivity.
You work for Russia Today, right? Isn't that your agency? And so, why shouldn't you ask your government the same kinds of questions that you're standing here asking me? Ask them about their military activities. Get them to tell you what, or
when
to deny what
they're
doing.
It seems your response is, why are you here? Well, you are leveling that accusation.
No,
and
ma'am.
If you give specifics,
no,
my colleagues would be able to ask Russian
officials.
Once
again, you're just wrong. I'm not leveling those accusations. Relief agencies that we find credible are leveling those accusations. So why don't you question them about their information and where they're getting it? And why don't you question your own defense ministry?
Which organizations then? Which ones?
We'll get you a list of them after the briefing. I don't have it right here in front of me, but I'm happy to provide to you some of the relief agencies that are telling us what they're seeing on the ground.
Kirby's obvious hostility to Chichikayan apparently got under the skin of one of the veteran American reporters there, the AP's Matt Lee.
Please be careful about saying your defense minister and things like that. I mean, she's a journalist just like the rest of us are. So it's, you know, she's asking pointed questions, but they're not, you know.
From a state-owned outlet, the questions that she's asking are not out of line. I didn't say the questions were out of line.
Okay.
I didn't say the questions were out of line.
But I'm not. Oh, no, I understand.
But I'm not going to put Russia Today on the same level with the rest of you who are representing independent media.
Meanwhile, Syria's President Bashar al-Assad expressed both hope and caution about the possibility of a change in direction for U.S. policy towards this country by the incoming Trump administration. Speaking with RT's Paolo Dantino, the Syrian president said,
"We don't have a lot of expectations because the American administration is not only about the president, it's about different powers within this administration, the different lobby that they're going to influence any president. So we have to wait and see when he embarks a new mission, let's say, opposition within this administration as president in 2 months' time. But we always say we have wishful thinking that the United States would be unbiased, respect the international law, doesn't interfere in other different countries around the world. And of course, stop supporting terrorists in Syria."
When Dantino asked the Syrian president about Trump's expression of interest in working with Damascus and Russia to fight ISIL, he said this.
"Of course, I would say this is promising, but can he deliver? Can he go in that regard? What about the countervailing forces within the administration, the media, the mainstream media that were against him? How can he deal with it? That's why for us it's still dubious whether he can do or live up to his promises or not. That's why we are very cautious in judging him, especially as he wasn't in a political position before. So we cannot tell anything about what he's going to do. But if he's going to fight the terrorists, of course we're going to be a natural ally in that regard with the Russians, with the Iranians, with many other countries who wanted to defeat the terrorists."
And now our weekly segment with BlackAgendaReport.com's Margaret Kimberly, her column under Freedom Rider this week, Obama's Hollow legacy. Let's discuss Obama's legacy.
Well, yes, you know, he set himself on the campaign trail and his ineffective outreach, especially to black people, that if anybody cared about his legacy, they should make sure Hillary Clinton was elected. But apparently nobody was paying attention, or not enough people were paying attention, because she lost in the Electoral College. And so this is a defeat for him, and that is a good thing. We have had more than 8 years. This goes back a long time, of Democrats, of people who call themselves liberal or progressive, signing on to policies that they really don't support or claim they don't support, all in an effort to get Democrats elected. So with starting especially, this was perfected with Bill Clinton, the first trade bill, NAFTA, which did take people's jobs. But there was silence among Democrats. There was this belief that the only way for a Democrat to win is for the Democratic rank and file to silence themselves and to go along with policies they don't like. So here we have this turn of events where the party, well, not the party, because the Republican and Democratic duopoly love to do these deals together, but where the Republican who got the nomination, and he got the nomination in large part because he said things like he was not going to support any policies that were harmful to workers. So here are progressives hanging on to the Democratic Party and to Hillary Clinton, who was, well, she lied about it, and we have to be once again thankful to WikiLeaks for telling us this, their public-private positions. She claimed to be opposed to TPP, which was going to be the next big trade deal, because she wanted to get labor off her back, as she said. But we didn't care if she did or if she said it or if she didn't say it. Democrats were going to still vote for her to our detriment. The Republicans, the Democrats became the party of war. The United States has been instigating conflict all over the world, destroying weaker nations like Libya, trying to undermine the Russian government and effect regime change in Russia. So, but Democrats are in favor of that, and constantly criticize Donald Trump because he wants to do the reasonable thing and have a good partnership with Russia. So the legacy is in tatters. That's a good thing. Obamacare is not, you know, it is an improvement in some ways, but it, because it depends on keeping the private sector, our healthcare system, in the control of the private sector, it's failing. So this defeat is, it can be a situation where progressives can learn something if people are willing to be introspective and to admit their own mistakes.
You know, you're saying finally the talking heads on TV are at least acknowledging that some working people might have either voted for Trump or decided not to vote for Hillary Clinton because they perceive their situation to be worse than it's described by the president. You know, and of course, we saw how the Greeks feel about that. He was talking about how wonderful things are in the United States and Greece. You had tens of thousands of people in the streets outside. And the Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras, felt compelled to say, well, good, if things are so good, why don't you go talk to Angela Merkel, tell her what happened with Trump, tell her about Brexit, and ask her about this huge mountain of debt they expect us to pay back.
Yes. It's interesting. This is a worldwide phenomenon, and I don't see very good analysis. You bring up Greece and Brexit, which is similar in that all the polls were wrong. People in the UK voted for Brexit, turned a thumbs down to neoliberalism, and nobody knew. And Trump won. While it wasn't a popular vote victory, he won enough votes and won in the Electoral College in large part because people saw that the system was not working in their interest. And he at least spoke about changing those things. So, but that's another thing. That's one of the other things that progressives should learn a lesson about. So far, the response has been that anyone who voted for Trump, or even people who would not vote for Hillary Clinton, are racists, fascists, misogynists, which is why, and being labeled that way, that's why they weren't honest with pollsters, and we didn't even see this coming. Well, you did. You saw it coming. So, but it's time to stop saying those things and to talk about how the Democrats failed and how they've been failing for a long time to deliver for their voters. And because Republicans, if you look at the differences between them, they become fewer and fewer over time. And, you know, it had come down to the last election. I don't remember, a lot of Republicans made comments about abortion, anti-abortion comments and excusing rape. And, you know, there was the Democrats just ran with it. And this was a reason they all had to be defeated. Never mind the fact that the Democratic Party wasn't making any efforts to win these races across the country, which would have put a halt to these anti-abortion laws.
Right.
But that's where progressives find themselves now, supporting things that they claim they don't want, and watching someone else flip the script and say things they should have been saying. And this, instead of marching, and I'm not telling people not to protest, but I'd ask people, what are you protesting exactly? Are you protesting because the person you didn't like won? Are you protesting against the Electoral College? I'm for that. But what are you protesting? You should be protesting the Democratic Party, and you should be asking yourselves, you could even protest yourself if that's possible, and ask yourself, people could be asking themselves how they ended up in this situation where they swore allegiance to things that were, you know, it's funny, progressives like to look down on white people who vote for Republicans and say they vote against their interests.
Right.
They're so stupid.
Right.
Well, a lot of progressives voted against their interests.
Yep.
And are now looking very stupid to me.
Yeah, and they have been for decades now. I mean, the thing that's the distinguishing point about this particular presidential election, as against, I would say, at least everyone since 1980, is that there were actually two different foreign policy perspectives that were being argued, that although Clinton never really addressed it, what she did essentially was Red Scare the positions that Trump was staking out. But Trump staked out an entirely different foreign policy vision from the bipartisan consensus that we've had since, you know, the last time it was challenged was in 1980. And not for nothing, if you just look at the treasure that's been spent on this particular set of adventures, so you're talking in the trillions of dollars, which would pay for in cash all of the things that need to be done to get the economy going. And on top of that, you've got the legacy of, you know, I saw they had 2 million signatures in 2 days to try to get the Electoral College to elect Clinton instead of Trump. You know, 2 million signatures in 2 days. Now, we've had 8 years. How many signatures have they gathered on a petition to tell Obama to release people who are being held there as a part of the mass incarceration project, or to prosecute killer cops? I mean, there's been 2 years that people have been in the streets. You don't have those petitions circulating, but you have this one.
Yeah.
And so,
exactly.
You know, I'm looking at that whole landscape and asking myself, as I get repeated emails from MoveOn.org to A, go out in the street, and B, send us money, you know, what exactly is being engineered here?
Yeah, this election has become a fundraising tool. You know, if you subscribe to The Nation or donate to ACLU or donate to the Sierra Club, I think a lot of these liberal organizations are rolling in dough since last Tuesday night. But yeah, that's all it amounts to. And there's hollowness not just in Obama, but in the entire progressive movement and what Democrats claim to believe in. the most shallow relationship, it turns out, was Obama's with black people. We had a phenomenon where the prospect of seeing a black president brought millions of people into the process who had stopped voting or never voted. So you saw this huge surge of votes in black constituencies across the country. So states like Ohio, which had been in the Republican column for some time, black people in those cities came out in force in 2008 and 2012 and won the state for him. But that's all there was to it, being proud to see a black president, and that was it. And Obama didn't deliver anything for black people aside from the happiness at his seeing him and his wife at a state dinner or on Air Force One or any of that very powerful but ultimately meaningless imagery. And as soon as he was no longer on the ballot, millions of votes disappeared. And his outreach, there wasn't any aside from telling jokes about the, you know, apocryphal cousin Pookie, who I guess didn't like being called Pookie and stayed home. Mm-hmm. No outreach from Hillary Clinton, who raised twice as much money as Donald Trump did, who didn't even have the support of his party establishment. And still, they were unable to keep even some of those voters. They just disappeared. And that is, talk about hollow. I don't know what exemplifies it more than that, but there's no discussion, unfortunately, in the black community about Obama. It was just, we have to support him, and if you didn't like him, you were a hater. And now, even though it's all over, still nobody wants to talk about it.
Right. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I find troubling is, if you look at the way the U.S. intel has rolled out various soft coups in various places, mm-hmm. I'm seeing a lot of those markers here with these people going into the streets. Now, you know, there's a lot of people that are in the streets that are there legitimately. They would be there anyway, no matter who won. Some of the folks mm-hmm. that you know, that I know, that are community organizers that do this stuff all the time, and they're not making money at it. They're in there because that's what they do. Mm-hmm. Their ranks are swelled substantially, their effort is being promoted by the same media that was wall-to-wall behind Clinton before this. And they're raising the cry that the Electoral College should negate the vote, basically, and elect Clinton or somebody else that has yet to surface as the alternative. And then you have, just process-wise, if that fails, the vote of the Electoral College has to be ratified by a joint session of Congress in the first week of January. And mm-hmm. you have, of course, a bipartisan elite consensus still, you know, hostile to Trump and certainly hostile to his foreign policy and some of his domestic policy initiatives that have been at least suggested. And so he may not get through that either, in contrast to the way Gore handled it in 2000 when he wouldn't even let people whine about what happened.
Yeah, it's although both houses are controlled by Republicans.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens, although Trump is an outsider,
right,
from Republican establishment and these duopoly policies.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think this is a good thing. This turmoil is a good thing. We have an electoral system that does not represent us. Both parties work together despite their differences on these trade, and TPP appears to be dead. That is a wonderful thing. And work together for the interests of the 1% and against the interests of ordinary people. And they'll throw us a bone with certain issues that matter to progressive people or that matter to conservatives. But in general, they are not interested in what we want them to do. So this is an opportunity in so many ways, but progressives are fixated on the Democratic Party and seem so far to be unwilling to look at where they went astray and what our strategy should be going forward. This should be the last time that a Democratic candidate for president thinks that he or she can support policies that are anathema to the rest of us. Somewhere along the line, Democrats decided that the only way to get a Democrat into office was to shut up and let them do what they wanted to do. So we signed on to getting rid of the 60-year entitlement to public assistance. We signed on to mass incarceration. We signed on to war and risking World War III against another nuclear power. All kinds of things that we used to be in favor of. Trump called Vladimir Putin, or I don't know who called whom, but they spoke on the phone a couple of days ago. And there was this immediate criticism, this red baiting, although Russia's been capitalist now for more than 20 years, against Russophobia. And that is the sort of thing that progressives used to applaud, that the United States would try to forge ties with other countries instead of being rivals. But here we are with this very reasonable approach being criticized and vilified. And yesterday, as if on cue, the NSA, the National Security Agency, announces that a state actor interfered with American elections. Well, they meant Russia, obviously. But here we are, the NSA is the body that spies on everybody in this country. They have a record of every phone call, every email, every text. We are under constant surveillance by the NSA. That used to be something we would speak out against. And instead, and it's pretty obvious to me that this is meant to deter the Trump administration from doing what they said they were going to do in relation to Russia. Right. And to continue this story about Russia interfering with the election. But it'll be interesting to see progressives defending the NSA.
Yeah.
And I remember before Election Day, 17 intelligence agencies say that Russia is interfering in the election. Well, first of all, I didn't know there were 17 intelligence agencies. But anyway, I said to someone,
damn.
I said, are these the same intelligence agencies who swore there was WMD in Iraq?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Because it wouldn't be the first time they allowed their work to be politicized. But this is part of the downfall of the progressive movement, and I really am hoping that this will turn around.
I mean, this is what's troubling to me about the situation. So, I mean, I'm seeing the stirrings of an attempted soft coup by, a la Dilma Rousseff, where, the legal processes are distorted, used in ways they were never, ever used before to achieve a particular end. That end, of course, being the goals of the elite to make sure that there's continuity rather than a disruption of the existing policies that are serving everyone so well. If those two efforts fail, Trump still has to get from the first week in January with after the joint session of Congress to the 20th of January, like 2 weeks. And I'm concerned he may actually, if not get shot, say have a heart attack from campaigning so hard, or maybe a little plane problem, even though he's been flying all over the world for 30 years or something like that. If there's some move, whether it's, process or extra process to block him, the people that are in the streets are going to be singing the wrong tune, in my opinion. Rather than standing up against the coup d'etat, they're going to actually be defending it because they stopped Trump.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that, but this would require people admitting they were wrong, and even forging alliances on the issues that are important, like saying we'll rewrite NAFTA. I don't know if it's even possible for him to get this done, but that is something where Democrats can say they will work with his administration. And so that would be a very positive thing for people who've silenced themselves to get their voice back,
right,
and to applaud an administration that wants to be a partner with Russia instead of making itself an enemy.
Right.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
So that is something I hope to see. And yes, you know, Pence is just a doctrinaire, old school Republican. So I hope that Donald Trump is alive and well for at least 4 years. We have some chance of getting some of the things that we used to say that we wanted. Excuse me. So, yes, it would be a mistake for people to just be in opposition to all the time. And I'm telling people, you know, he won. And if there are places, if there are issues where we can come to agreement, then we should go with that. But to keep saying that Trump supporters were all fascists, all racists, all misogynists, and you can't work with him at all, and people should have supported Hillary because his racism should have been the deal breaker, and enough of that, because the deal breaker was Hillary Clinton herself. And you can't tell people, just hold your nose and vote for someone. Some people, if they have to hold their nose too tight, they're not voting for that person.
Yeah, right.
And that's another reason why millions of Democratic votes, 6 million fewer votes cast for Hillary Clinton than for Obama in 2012. So I'm hoping that wiser heads will prevail and try to find ways to work out where we can. And look, it's going to be a Republican administration. It's going to be conservative. Most of the people he'll appoint are going to be people I don't like. Most of his judicial picks will be people I don't like. So there's, you know, I already know that. But even if it's narrow, even if it's just a few things where I can go along with Trump, then I will do. I'll oppose where I should oppose, standing by the principles that I've stood for years. I'll oppose those things that I feel the need to speak out against. But when or if he does want to do things that I also am in favor of, then I will say so.
Right. I mean, you know, on that point, and, you know, I've mentioned this before, but, you know, I'm looking at this position staked out by some of the people on the left that I have a great deal of respect for, and in particular, in this case, UNAC, with the statement that they issued last week that was a general condemnation of Trump instead of owning his foreign policy position, saying, you know, you articulated the peace movement's agenda, we're going to hold your feet to the fire, and we got your back as you go fight for that if you actually do it. And by the way, this other stuff, no way, we're going to stop you dead in your tracks. You know, instead of laying it out that way, they left out the part that's their, you know, raison.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it's a funny thing. If there's peace in Syria, it'll be because Donald Trump is president.
Right.
This horrible 5-year-long conflict that's killed 500,000 people, that's sent millions of people, dispersed 9 million people as refugees, was all caused by the United States. And most progressives can't even bring themselves to say what is obvious. Those people would be in their homes. Those people wouldn't be dead if the United States hadn't decided to try to overthrow the Assad government. And if Trump as president, if he does make good on his promise to stop regime change, if he does make good on his promise to get out of Syria, should be applauded by those of us who want the U.S. to stop intervening in the rest of the world. If you can agree with him on an issue, we need to say so. And to do otherwise, to just ignore it. So what will we say if Trump manages to bring peace to Syria. And I think it's something people should start thinking about now.
Margaret Kimberly, thank you very much. A pleasure as always. This week's column at Freedom Rider, Obama's Hollow Legacy.
Thank you very much.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.